57% of the electricity in this province comes from my territory. So I feel I have the right to do this all everywhere. I find it, well, thank you, first of all, for for the invitation to speak here a bit. I know we're running out of time, but I'll still take my time to speak. I think it's important to do that, especially when you have visitors from afar, and given 15 minutes or 20 minutes to speak is not much based on our experiences. It's sort of fitting that I finish off this panel because a lot of the experiences, a lot of the concerns, preoccupations and struggles and resistance that I heard from this panel this morning, I have a piece of legislation before the Parliament of Canada that I introduced back in April to address those very exactly preoccupations and concerns and what I like to call human rights of Indigenous peoples. This is all about Bill C-262, which is before Parliament right now, has passed first reading in April. I think it's important that you realize where this UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples comes from. The UN Declaration is a document that we started to negotiate, and very few of us Indigenous leaders participated in those 23 years that this process took to arrive in September 2007, when the General Assembly of the UN considered the UN Declaration. So it took 23 years for many of us to get there. I'm one of the very few that participated throughout those 23 years from 1984 in Geneva right up to September 2007 in New York. Before I start, I just want to briefly explain who I am, where I'm from. My name is Romeo Saganash. I'm from northern Quebec, a small community called Waswanipi. Waswanipi in Cree means light on the water. My people used to hunt or spear sturgeon at night, and other peoples that came to our territory noticed that we speared sturgeon at night with torches, and that's how the name came about, light on the water. That's where Waswanipi comes from. I'm part of the last generation of Crees that were born in the forest, raised in the forest. So I lived the first 7 years of my life, 7.5 years of my life in a forest, hunting, fishing, and trapping with my parents and my siblings. And so I did that for the first 7 years of my life. In fact, the only language that I spoke and that I've heard during those first 7 years of my life was my own language, Cree. Then I was taken away for 10 years into this system called residential schools in this country, where kids were forcibly taken away from their families and communities and put into these, what they call residential schools in this country. So I spent the next 10 years in residential school. And I still recall because when I arrived at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, that day they took us away, we arrived late, 2 or 3 in the morning, and I saw the priest up the stairs talking to us. I didn't understand a word he was saying, but he was speaking to us in his black robe. So I spent 10 years in residential school. And before going back into the forest to continue the only way of life that I knew as a youngster, before I decided to go to law school. And by the way, I did my law degree in this university. So I'm glad to be back. That's why I don't mind stealing electricity from this university. So I did my law school here. And I did start working with the Grand Council of the Cree for a long time because my people struggled with a lot of developmental issues related to mining in traditional Cree territory, related to forestry exploitation in the traditional Cree territory, and of course hydroelectric development. In those days, in the early 70s, the James Bay Project was one of the biggest hydroelectric developments in North America. And my people fought against that project because of the environmental impacts that it would have in our territory, because of the social impacts that the project would have on our territory. And we still can feel those social impacts in the James Bay territory. We notice it in our kids, in our children, our youth, and even on our way of life. So we knew that it would have enormous impacts. And over the last 45 years in the James Bay territory, we had all these different impacts from different developments happening in the territory to a point that if you add all of the impacts of climate change in the Cree territory, well, it has cumulative impacts throughout the territory, which are pretty hard to assess at this point in time, but our elders and the people that live off the land of hunting, fishing, trapping, the Cree way of life, they see them, and they've seen them for the last 20 years, and they can talk about them. There's a lot of knowledge that's being developed because of that in the Cree territory. As I said, I worked for 23 years on the development, the drafting, and negotiation of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. That work was carried out by this group that the UN created back in 1982, called the United Nations Working Group on Indigenous Populations. So this group was created back in 1982 and had a double mandate. Every year, a lot of us, both member states and indigenous representatives and organizations, would travel to Geneva for 10 days and negotiate and discuss fundamental human rights of indigenous peoples. So the working group had the mandate to draft the declaration on one hand, but it also had the mandate to consider developments in the recognition of the rights of indigenous peoples throughout the world. So we did that for 23 years. I must say that a lot of the issues that we discussed at the UN during those years, a lot of them were pretty difficult. I'll give you a couple of examples. First of all, the working group was called a working group on indigenous populations because the UN system, international law, did not recognize indigenous peoples as peoples. It took a long time for us to get the member states that we were negotiating with in that process to recognize that indigenous peoples were peoples like all other peoples on this planet. So that took almost a decade to get recognized. And it was important for us because we had all of the same characteristics as any other peoples on this planet. And we maintained that position throughout for a long time because only peoples under international law have a right to self-determination. So that's why it was important for us to get that recognition as peoples. And you can guess that the next challenge after that recognition was to get the member states to recognize that indigenous peoples, like all other peoples, have a right to self-determination. So having that recognition of the right of self-determination took many years to negotiate, to get the member states to accept it. You know, they said, yeah, maybe you have a right to self-determination as peoples, but it's not the same as other peoples. So they wanted to qualify the right of self-determination of indigenous peoples in a way that it would dilute that right or making it less as other rights of self-determination. That in itself was a long battle as well, to get that recognition that we have a right to self-determination. The other example that I would give, and if you read the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, you'll find the provisions of number 25, Article 25 and following, that relate to lands, territories, and resources. Now, I think you can guess very easily why those provisions were important, as much as for us as for member states, because of the interests that are involved in land, in our traditional lands, territories, and resources. And by the way, when my brother from Ecuador speaks about that spiritual connection that we have with our lands, well, the UN Declaration talks about that spiritual connection or recognition of that spiritual connection with our lands, but also with our territories and with our resources. And I think my brother from Ecuador spoke to that very eloquently. So I think that those are the hardest parts of our negotiations throughout that time. And in September 2007, as you may be aware, after a brief period after the Human Rights Commission of the UN adopted the declaration and sent it to the General Assembly for consideration at their following meeting in September, there was this brief period between June and September where there was intense lobbying going on among the member states because during that period from June to September, before the General Assembly had to consider the declaration, a lot of us had to lobby a great number of member states that did not participate in the process that lasted 23 years. And there's two major blocks of countries that did not really participate in the process, and that's the Asian bloc and the African bloc. And if you know the UN system, those two blocks alone make up the majority with the General Assembly. So it was important for us indigenous people to convince those countries that will have to vote on the UN Declaration to understand what the UN Declaration was all about and to respond if they had any concerns or questions with respect to the UN Declaration. And mind you, certain states that were opposed to the adoption of the UN Declaration on that September 2007, namely Canada, the US, New Zealand, and Australia. Those were the four countries that voted against the declaration in September 2007 at the UN General Assembly. So you can imagine the efforts and the resources that they put in lobbying those two bloc of countries during that period of June to September. So we had to do our work there as well. Fortunately, in September 2007, the UN General Assembly adopted the UN Declaration with an overwhelming majority. Four countries voted against, and I mentioned them. 11 countries ended up abstaining from voting, yes or no. And that included Russia, who wanted to vote against the UN Declaration, but after all, decided to abstain. So I think it was an important process that lasted 23 years. So over the time since 2007, when it was adopted, certain countries took measures to make sure that the UN Declaration is implemented within their own countries, within their own constitutions. And this is exactly where I come in. Now, I've worked for indigenous peoples in general and for my own people, the Cree, in particular for 30 years, from outside the walls of the political institutions of this country, from the National Assembly of Quebec, from outside the walls of the Parliament of Canada, for more than 30 years. And in 2011, I decided to run as a candidate for the NDP in this country and got elected in 2011 as a member of parliament of one of the largest ridings in this country. Because I wanted to test the system, I wanted to test the institution called the Parliament of Canada and see how far we can go as a member of parliament to make sure that the human rights of the first peoples of this country are respected and recognized once and for all. We have a recognition presently under the Constitution under Section 35, of course, but it's in very general terms, I would say. It's a recognition and affirmation of Aboriginal and treaty rights. We have to go to courts to clarify which exactly Aboriginal rights are we talking about here. And over the years, you've seen that the Supreme Court of Canada has confirmed many of those rights. But here's where I come in. So I did have a first private member's bill that I introduced back in 2011 to make sure that the laws of Canada and the laws of the Parliament of Canada are in harmony with the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And I should mention that the UN Declaration is perhaps the most comprehensive document in international law that speaks to a wide range of rights of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. And the 370-some million Indigenous people throughout the planet that live in more than 70 countries around the world. So it addresses their political rights, it addresses their social, cultural, economic rights, it addresses their environmental rights, and of course it addresses the spiritual rights of those peoples. So it's a very comprehensive document. These rights are outlined in 46 articles. The first bill that I introduced in the previous parliament back in 2011 was defeated by 17 votes in the final year of the previous parliament under the premiership of Stephen Harper. Stephen Harper, the Conservative government, had the majority in the House, and the Conservatives voted in blocking my bill, so it was defeated by 17 votes back in May of 2015. But everybody knew that I was going to come back with it and reintroduce my private member's bill. It's a new one. It takes into consideration the recent developments in this country with respect to not only the UN Declaration, but the whole concept of reconciliation. If you look up the Black's Law Dictionary, and if you look up reconciliation, it talks about restoring harmony amongst peoples. And the Supreme Court, since 2004 at least, has talked about reconciliation in their numerous rulings. And in particular, in the Haida Nation case, this is a case that dates back in 2004. where the Supreme Court talks about reconciliation, meaning to reconcile the pre-existing sovereignty. And those are the words of the Supreme Court, the pre-existing sovereignty of indigenous peoples with the assumed sovereignty of the crown. That's how the Supreme Court has talked about reconciliation in their ruling, this 2004 decision. So pre-existing sovereignty with the assumed sovereignty of the crown. That's where we need to reconcile as peoples in this country. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission, in their report that was tabled not too long ago, has 94 calls to action. The fundamental ones among those 94 are call to action 43 and call to action 44. And both of them, there are others where there is mention of the UN Declaration, but those two are supposed to be, according to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, the framework for reconciliation in this country. So call to action 43 says, calls on the governments of Canada, provinces, territories, and municipalities to fully adopt and implement the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples as the framework for reconciliation in this country. So no government among those mentioned in that call to action can say, we agree with all the calls to action, all 94 of them, but we have a slight problem with 43 because of that wording, adoption and implementation of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, because it's the fundamental one. It's the framework for reconciliation, according to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And 44 talks about developing a national action plan for the implementation of the UN Declaration in collaboration and cooperation with Indigenous peoples for those governments. So two important calls to action. If you recall as well, during the last federal campaign, the federal government has talked about this new federal government, or the Liberal Party, talked about implementing all 94 calls to actions, talked about implementing the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples as well. The Minister of Aboriginal Affairs and the Minister of Justice of Canada also went to the UN, to the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues in May, and talked about adopting and implementing the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples at the UN most recently. My bill proposes to implement calls to action 43 and 44 by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and to deliver on those promises made by the new Liberal federal government to adopt and implement the UN Declaration. So one has to wonder, and it seems odd to me, one has to wonder why the federal government has not been responding to my direct question whether or not they support my private member's bill, C-262. They haven't committed to support my private member's bill, although my bill proposes to do exactly what they're saying and what they're promising. Kind of strange, right? Well, Tom talked about business as usual in his opening remarks. I think that's where we're at right now. So what I've been doing since I introduced the bill, I traveled throughout the country. I'm touring the country to talk about my bill to not only Indigenous groups, but non-Indigenous groups, because reconciliation is about all of us. Reconciliation addresses both us and all of you. So I talked to Indigenous and non-Indigenous groups throughout the country. And Leah talked about a petition that I also carry around. So you can go see Leah if you want to sign a petition to call on the Government of Canada to adopt and implement the UN Declaration. I think there's a distinction between adopting and implementing. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission uses both words. It calls on the governments to fully adopt and implement the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. You implement through policies and programs that any government can change through time, but you adopt through legislation. And I'm providing this legislative framework for all of us for reconciliation through this bill. So I want to make sure that all of the concerns that we've heard on this panel since it started, let me finish by saying that I think what is difficult, I've learned with experience, is that I come from a territory where my people signed the first modern treaty in this country. It's called the James Bay Northern Quebec Agreement. It's the first modern treaty that was signed in this country back in 1975, almost 41 years ago. And although the James Bay Northern Quebec Agreement recognizes many rights for the Cree, in favor of the Cree under the James Bay Agreement, under that treaty, we still have to be vigilant with respect to the protection and recognition of our rights. For instance, I talked briefly about forestry, and that treaty is supposed to balance out the right to development in the territory with the fundamental rights of the Cree in the territory. They're supposed to balance out. But we're going through right now in Waswanapi, my home community, where 90% of the traditional territory of Swanapi has been affected by forestry. And there's only a very small 10% of our traditional territory that has not been affected by forestry. And Waswanapi wants to protect the Broadback River Valley from forestry development, because there are certain animal species in that territory that are vulnerable that we want to protect. There's no old forest growth in that territory that we want to protect. It's paradise for me because that's where I was born. I was born literally on that land. So I think although there are recognition of rights on one hand, and James Bay Northern Quebec Agreement is a proof of that, we still have to continue our struggles and our resistance to protect what we have left as Indigenous peoples. That's what my bill proposes to do. That's what the UN Declaration is supposed to do. It took us 23 years to arrive with this document. And it takes into consideration, I listened carefully to all of the speakers this morning, it takes into consideration every single example that you've heard on this panel this morning. And I think, although I work from a different place as a member of Parliament today, I think I understand very precisely what my brothers have talked about this morning. And this is the way I'm trying to contribute to protecting and acknowledging their fundamental human rights. Miigwech.